Several hours later, Caleb and Charlian stood on a balcony high on the side of King Michael's Tower, looking out across the sparse lights of Telesburg proper and the brighter smear of light which was the perpetually busy waterfront.
"That poor woman," Charlian murmured.
"Amen,"
Caleb said softly and reached out and took her hand. She turned her head, glancing at him, as she realized the action had been completely unconscious on his part. His eyes were still on the dark sweep of his sleeping capital as he laid her hand on his forearm and covered it with his own.
"I doubt I'll sleep very well tonight," he continued. "I've discovered that knowing what his sentence was, and actually hearing how it was carried out, especially hearing it from his own wife, are two different things."
He shook his head, his jaw tight.
"The Inquisition has much to answer for. Indeed," he turned to look at her squarely, "if the truth be known, this goes beyond the group of four, whatever we may say."
"I realized that even before Earl Greyharbor brought me your messages," she said steadily, and squeezed his arm gently but firmly. "That pig Clinton is the one immediately responsible for all of this. I've never doubted that for a moment, and every word Madame Dinis said only confirmed it. But if the entire church hadn't become corrupt, a man like Clinton could never have gained the power he has. It's tempting to blame the man and not the institution, but that's the easy answer, the one that saves us from looking truth squarely in the eye. And," she met his gaze without flinching, "almost the very first lesson Marak, Baron Greenmountain, taught me after Hector paid for my father's murder was that a monarch's first and overriding duty is to face the truth, however ugly it may be, however much she or he may long to avoid it."
Caleb gazed at her in silence for several seconds, then twitched his head in an odd little half-nod. She had the strange sensation that it was directed to someone else, someone not present, but he never looked away from her.
"I proposed the union of Carus and Chisholm because it seemed a military necessity," he told her. "I had reports about you and your court, of course, much as I'm sure you had about Carus and about me. From those reports, I'd hoped I'd find not just an alliance with your kingdom, but an ally in you."
His nostrils flared.
"I have to tell you, Charlian, that even on this brief an acquaintance, it's obvious to me that the reports of your wisdom and courage failed to do you justice."
"Indeed."
She tried to keep her tone light as she studied his face as closely as she could in the available light. Then she laughed softly.
"I was thinking much the same about you, as it happens. I do hope this isn't a case of two hesitant suitors deciding to make the best of their situation."
"If either of us should be in that position, my lady," he said, bowing with a gallant flourish, "it must be you. Now that I've seen you and met you, I assure you that I've decided this was one of the best notions I've ever had, on a great many levels."
He straightened, and Charlian felt a pleasant tingle inside at the frank desire he had allowed into his expression. She squeezed his arm again, then turned to look back out over Telesburg while she sorted through her own feelings. As the daughter of a king, and then as a queen in her own right, Charlian Tate had accepted long ago that her marriage would be one of state. She'd also realized that as a queen in a kingdom which had shown so little tolerance for a woman's rule in the past, marriage would pose particular dangers for her, and yet there'd been her clear responsibility to provide a legitimate, acknowledged heir to her throne in order to secure the succession. With so many needs, opportunities, and threats to balance, there'd been no room in her life to worry about whether or not she might love or even like the man to whom she eventually found herself wed. And then this. Barely 5 months ago, she'd been certain Carus and Caleb were doomed and that she would be forced to participate in their murder.
She'd never imagined, in her wildest flight of fantasy, that she might actually find herself entertaining the possibility of marrying him, of binding her own kingdom irrevocably to Karras and to Karras's rebellion against the oppressive authority of Mother Church, and to whatever fate that rebellion ultimately produced. Even now, there were moments when she wondered what insanity had possessed her to even contemplate such a union. But only moments, and they were becoming steadily fewer. "It's Caleb himself," she thought. "I've seen so much cynicism, so much careful maneuvering for position, and spent so much of my life watching for the hidden dagger in the hands of supposed friends. But there's no cynicism in Caleb. That's the most remarkable thing of all, I think. He believes in responsibilities and duties, in ideals, not just in pragmatism and expediency. And he's got all the empty-headed, invincibly optimistic enthusiasm of one of those incredibly stupid heroes out of a romantic ballad somewhere. How in God's name could he have grown up as a crown prince without discovering the truth?"